The ruler was believed to be chosen by the gods, and he was responsible to them for the safety and prosperity of his people. His people, in turn, owed the gods their allegiance, and we see there is a circle of status and hierarchy in which the ruler has to report to the gods on behalf of the people. No historical texts inform us of how kings were actually chosen. One theory proposed in the 1940s by a scholar named Thorkild Jacobsen reconstructs a form of primitive democracy as a way to select a king. The evidence that Jacobsen used draws from the Epic of Gilgamesh and other stories in which a king consulted an assembly of elders and an assembly of youths. So you remember we discussed this in the last lecture where Gilgamesh goes to present his plan to cut down the cedar trees guarded by Humbaba. When Gilgamesh makes his announcements, the assembly of elders advised him pretty frankly not to go. And there is some indication in this epic poem that the assembly felt free to advise a ruler. The elders say to Gilgamesh, "You are young, Gilgamesh. Your feelings carry you away. You are ignorant of what you speak." If we compare this in later lectures to the strong authoritarianism of the king, we can't imagine anyone saying such things to a ruler. This early description of kingship shows that the king had some level of discussion with his people about his course of action. The elders, as you remember, did finally agree to let him go, but they were the ones who advised him to take Enkidu as someone who could guide Gilgamesh through the wilderness. Gilgamesh does this, and we see that the king takes the advice, to some extent, of the assembly. And think about how strong-willed Gilgamesh was when we first met him. He was not the type of ruler who would readily take advice from others. So we might see here more support for the concept that even a young, headstrong ruler like Gilgamesh would have to take the advice of the counselors into consideration when he carried out his actions. This and stories of the assemblies of the gods in which they debate important issues gave Jacobsen the idea that the king was chosen, perhaps by these assemblies, maybe for a military purpose, or maybe for some other type of leadership. The theory is not currently in favor, although you will still see it in a number of surveys of world history. Later sources described the ruler as a shepherd of his people, and this metaphor emphasizes his protective qualities. But they really don't tell us what the king did or why he was chosen. We see that we now have a ruler in Mesopotamia, but we're not sure where he came from, what his responsibilities were, and sometimes we don't even know what his title is. The ruler and his family lived in an igal, or a big house. These have been discovered in 3rd millennium archaeological contexts. They show a central courtyard with rooms on three sides and a long open room on the fourth side that was presumably a reception hall or perhaps an audience chamber. Walls surrounded the palace, separating the king from his people. We have three examples of palaces, one at Eridu, one at Kish, and one in a northern Syrian site called Mari, which we will come to know in future lectures. Generally, these palaces look the same. We only have three examples, but they adopt the same type of architecture. The household of the king would provide employment for many workers, and we have evidence from the early dynastic period that there was a women's household overseen by the wife of the ruler. This evidence comes from Lagash, where a number of texts survive from the era and help us understand what royal life was like.